All rights reserved for the Origami Vancast and Steve Coleman. One of the main reasons I've started this podcast is to provide some sort of guidance from personal experience for people who are going through this for the first time or people who are overwhelmed by their pain, as I certainly was for, you know, a very long time. Nothing, as I've said in other shows, there is no one thing, but I do think that we tend to exclude things, possibilities from our experience, maybe that we shouldn't. I was made to go into therapy when I was placed onto fentanyl prescription, which I think was a good thing. I chose a therapist who was also a hypnotherapist. And that way, you know, got to meet their requirements and also do some experimentation of my own, as I'd read about hypnotherapy being very effective for pain. It was a little bit of an issue selecting a therapist in the beginning. In the early days, my pain doctor, the pain clinic where I go has a dedicated therapist that specialize in chronic pain. However, when I went, the ones that I went to go see, I don't think they were prepared for the level and extent of the pain that I was in and had been in and for how long. Actually, they kind of stopped scheduling appointments for me, or wouldn't really return my calls to set up an appointment. But anyway, I eventually found this therapist. His name is David. And let's just jump right into what will be my, well, what this actually is the last in-person therapy session that I had with David. We took a small break in the middle. I would like to say that this was planned. I did have some questions prepared. There were some miscommunications, and doing your very first interview for a podcast in the middle of your therapy session proved to be a little more difficult maybe than I gave it credit for. There are certain words that I was unable to say at certain points, like pain and accident, that really detract from this if it were a story. The main points that I wanted to get into here are that therapy and hypnotherapy, a lot of people discount them. They say, "Oh, I'm not crazy. I don't need that." A lot of people are too macho or too confident in their own selves to not need advice from other people. And I think it's always good to get some advice. And I think, you know, certainly I've had several therapists where I didn't go back, or, you know, we just didn't gel. With a non-trivial amount of looking, I did find David and found myself comfortable with him about 5 years ago. So comfortable, in fact, I guess that we never, or certainly I don't recall, ever having spoken about my diagnosis before. So let's get right into that and the rest of my time with David.
You have a post-traumatic stress disorder with a major depression.
Really?
The idea of major depression means that depression is so strong that it's in some ways interfering with your life. Uh-huh. And it's a natural reaction to an awful situation. It's a natural reaction to severe pain. It's a natural reaction to a life-changing event, which your accident was. So it's all understandable. And if we have to put a label on it, that's what
right.
It is. But the label really doesn't tell much, really. It's just a way of letting everybody know, okay, this is what happened. This is the result of what happened. But it doesn't really tell you and me or anybody else the quality of life that was there. And it doesn't tell anybody the dramaticness of it all, and yeah. And the struggle of it all. These are just labels.
Yeah, we've never even spoken about this, I don't think, about what labels you put on me for insurance all this time, because I'm not, to me, the labels don't really mean anything much, other than they kind of help guide conversation, maybe, or, you know, shorthand for things.
They're done mostly now for research purposes, so that when we're talking about major depression single episode, we're talking, that statement carries certain connotations of symptoms and impairments that you can compare large groups of those people for treatment trials or drug trials or those things. You kind of have a common language. So they use more for research purposes than academic and therapy purposes.
Yeah, definitely. So whenever I read The Body Keeps a Score, definitely felt like, oh, okay, well, I must have PTSD. And,
it's almost impossible not to.
Yeah, from that there, it would be pretty tough not to. I think I told you a lot whenever I wrote the first LinkedIn article, whenever I quit the job and everything, and felt like I needed to explain to people, you know, why I quit so abruptly. I had suppressed that story. You know, I used to tell it pretty freely, like for the first few weeks when I got out of the hospital and stuff. And it just started, it was so traumatic for me to remember any part of it that I kind of just started suppressing it, you know, very heavily. And I remembered some of the work that we had done when I'd had flashbacks before. I believe you said that it was okay to work through them as long as, you know, they were helpful.
And timing is everything. If you're struggling in the midst of a major depression, it's hard to get the resources to process traumatic material.
Good point. Yeah.
A little side note here. I had a severe car accident when I was 12 years old. My fault. I was on a bicycle and I crossed the road and a car going about 55 miles an hour hit me, or actually I hit it. I was pretty banged up and almost died, and a bunch of surgeries later and all that stuff, whatever. So about 10 years ago, I bought a bike. I'm riding my bike. One of my first rides, I'm going down this fairly large road with wide borders. So I feel I'm in pretty safe territory and riding along. And I see a sign for a yard sale. And I said, well, I'll go up this street to find if there's anything up there. I'm just a curious thing, you know. So I look back, and I don't see any cars, and I look forward, and I don't see any cars, and I start to turn my bike onto the road, and I had a panic attack. And I pushed my way through the other side of the road, and I went up the street and stuff, and everything kind of settled down. And I knew exactly what was happening, that my body was remembering riding a bike crossing a road. That would be 38 years ago. I had not had a recollection of that, but there's how the body does keep the score.
David's office is located on the third floor of a late 1800s New England textile mill. The stairs to his office were quite steep, and although the building does have an elevator, when I began seeing him years ago, I vowed to always take the stairs and fight hard to get up there. In this next segment, David and I reflect a little bit on the time that has passed and begin to discuss the hypnotic tool that David developed for me to help control the amount of pain I experienced.
Okay. So, as long as that light is solid, we're recording. It's a red light. Thank you, David.
Welcome.
I was walking up the stairs thinking how many times I had done this, and under how many different circumstances?
It's been quite a journey.
Yeah, since the stairs have changed, they got cleaned up and blackened and gold letters and I don't know. Maybe they that's a weird way to wish it.
They haven't gotten any less long.
Yeah, it's three flights of pretty steep stairs. But, yeah, I came in here grabbing the handle and coming up them. I remember it was a fight back then to come up.
So. It was a fight to stay alive.
Well, that's been the name of the game, hasn't it, with you and I?
In the early times, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thankfully got through that. And, you know, I'm happy that...
You were in so much pain that hopelessness was just an inch away.
I feel like I'd been hopeless for a very long time, you know. Definitely devoid of hope, you know. And then when fentanyl just wasn't tolerable anymore, you know, and wasn't really helping with the pain anymore, it was even worse. But, you know, the hypnotic tool that you gave me, one, just to control the pain, was, you know, very helpful. And I really appreciate, you know, that role at that time.
I felt the need to give you something, to give you some agency, some power of to change some very difficult and painful symptoms that you had. And... you have a very creative mind, a very strong mind, and you took to it quite readily.
That's, I mean, that's good to know. Do you think that that's common in patients, or something that this lack of agency and maybe coming up with a creative way is to access it is?
I'm always looking for the inner resources that people have. And when I listen to them, especially in the first interviews, I'm always looking for where are their strengths. And some people have considerable resources, and other people have less so. And I've always been surprised, too, thinking that I couldn't find any there, but in hypnotic treatments, we find some.
It certainly surprised me, and
we use several different hypnotic procedures in our work in the early years, especially as you progressed and had more of a sense of control. And our work was one piece of a larger picture that you were undertaking. Your massage work was hugely important. Your own quest for ways to relieve pain was hugely important. And it all came together, in a sense, to get you where you are now.
It did, and, you know, I can't believe, you know, how complicated a picture, you know, it's been to get to that point and to get to where I am now from where I was. It's hard to even imagine it's possible that this combination of circumstances has come together. I think that was part of the hopelessness, you know, in the first place.
And you would be passing out due to severe pain. In fact, yeah. You would even welcome being passing out, that you wouldn't have to experience it anymore. It was that desperate a time.
Well, it's cool to hear you say that. I mean, we didn't have any discussion about this, but that's really what level 10 pain is. You know, it's just when you just can't endure anymore. You know, you really can't.
I can't imagine what that must have been like for you. I've never had that experience at all in my life. But I witnessed it.
Yeah, it's something that's hard to communicate to people.
Hey everyone, this is Steve Coleman. Imagine that I am trying to sell you something right now. How appealing is that? Not very, in my opinion. So, we're going to try and not have commercials on this podcast. I'm definitely going to not support this podcast with anything that I would not use or condone. That's kind of the whole reason why I live in a van and have a minimal life is I don't think it is going to help my message if I try and extract as much money out of the chronic pain patient as the drug companies do. So how about we just do this podcast and see where things go. In this segment, David and I discuss the hypnotic tool further.
One of the interesting experiences that I have had with you is in the early times when we were doing the hypnotic work, developing an imaginary dial so that you could control some of the signal of pain coming up from the brainstem into your mind. And as I checked in with you unconsciously after we developed that tool, your unconscious mind said it didn't want to help you with this right now. You remember that?
Yeah, it didn't trust me.
Yeah, and that's your wisdom talking. And when I heard that response, that it didn't want to help you manage pain, I always think of the unconscious mind as always trying to do something that's helpful. So we had to understand what the helpfulness was, why it was doing that for you. And I asked your unconscious if it was more than one reason, and it said no. And I said, would it be okay for you to let Steve know what the reason is? And it said, yes, it's okay. And so I said, well, let him know. And after a few seconds, a little smile turned on your face, and you told me what the reason was. And that took us our treatment in a whole different direction, in a sense. And once you were able to satisfy its worry for you, it allowed the tool to be useful again.
Yes, it did.
And I think that's just amazing.
You know, I think I told you, but I don't know if you would remember or wrote it down, or maybe I didn't tell you, but at the most severe in this recovery that I've had, you know, back when I still lived here in New Hampshire in a sticks and bricks house, I had to tear something in the fusion area of my neck, like inside the spinal canal, and that is the worst pain that I've had since the wreck. You know, I passed out from it, and it was quite severe. And I ended up doing it on the second try, separated by like 6 months. I found myself in the situation where I could tear it again. And the pain was so bad that I wanted, you know, it had been like a year since I accessed that tool. So I wanted to see, you know, what would happen if I did. And as soon as I brought up the image, it came, you know, it comes up pretty quickly with me. It came up very quickly, but it was different. You know, normally it's this old school knob from 0 to 6. Most of the time it was like an old thermostat, but when I envisioned it this time, when I was tearing the spinal cord stuff, it came up as a big bank vault lock. Like, don't even try. And I thought that was really, it kind of blew my mind, you know.
It's guiding you.
Yeah, I did it anyways. I kind of overruled and... which, you know, I've come to find, you know, that whole process, you flip some kind of switch inside my mind, you know, that has allowed me to sense, understand, you know, myself a lot better. And it's been invaluable, what I've learned since then, you know, just having that little spark of insight as to why my mind was doing that, you know, has helped me, like, have a better relationship with my body and myself. And take care of myself.
Take care of yourself, yes.
Absolutely, in a way that I simply was not taking care of myself. You know, I was taking care of other people's business. You know, I was taking care of a house up here. You know, I was taking care of the bills, but I was not taking care of myself. And it ended up in a life that I didn't want to live anymore.
You're much wiser for it.
I guess so. I think in some ways I've committed some sort of social suicide here too, with this, with what I've done. Certainly, there's been an aspect of that. It's not been a conscious decision or something I necessarily desire, but it's sort of been necessary, you know. And all the time alone has been very helpful, I think.
You've used your time well, apparently, and you've got some connections. You're a social person. We all are. So yeah. You need to feed that part of you, too.
Yeah, and I do. I have some, you know, my friends have been down-selected in this process, but I have some really good ones that I haven't yet ruined relationships with. And, you know, I'm going to try and build from there as a, you know, I've feel like I'm a different person now, and people have told me that, you know, I'm a different person at this point, you know. The same friends that, you know, when I moved to show them part of the van, this is on the outside, I was, you know, went to open the door, that I moved so quickly they thought I was going to fall down, and so they reached out to catch me, and then we all kind of laughed about it. They, you know, I guess feel I'm less on edge. You know,
you truly are more enlightened, and you've mastered your pain incredibly well. Hopefully, it'll continue your lifespan.
Yeah, I mean, it really has been about the relief of the symptom, you know, more than the. I didn't have any choice but to endure the pain. I don't think, you know, I still am not really calibrated as to how much it is, you know, or whatever, but it's a lot. It's been a lot. But I feel like, I mean, I feel like I have been reconstituted or something, you know, and I don't mean that lightly, you know.
You've kind of tamed yourself a little bit too, haven't you?
I think that was necessary step number one, wasn't it? That's what wisdom was telling me.
It was indeed. And that was a tough process for you to be in, let that part of you go.
Yeah, to consciously let it go. Because, you know, I think physically I wasn't that person anymore. I couldn't do, you know, a lot of stuff anymore. I mean, ironically, I can now, but, you know, but I'm not going to. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of it's really been more acceptance than anything, you know, just evaluate the situation, see it for really what it is, and accept it, and move on.
Yeah, that's big.
It's hard to see a lot of times what you need to accept, you know. It's right in front of you.
We don't see what we don't want to see until we have to.
Yeah, right.
I think that's true for all of us.
Yeah, in pretty much all situations, right? You have the convenience blinders up, try and pretend it's not there.
Through working with David, I feel that I have learned a fair bit about the power of both the conscious and the unconscious mind. And I feel that there is a relationship there that often, maybe typically, results in attention. In particular, my conscious wants and needs and materialism are not really what is best for me as an organism. And I think that inner tension, at least in my case, manifested itself in part as pain. On that table, to convince, I guess, my unconscious that it was not time to just go to sleep and die, I had to
somehow convince myself that it was going to be possible, that staying through any more of this pain was going to be worth it. And I really believe that my unconscious remembered that very second and never fully let me use a treatment of a symptom as a way of saying that I had addressed the saying to my unconscious that I had addressed the actual cause of the problem. So if you listen to my accident story, there are parts that I can't, that I wasn't able to speak about whenever I impacted the poles. But basically, I feel that my tissues were sort of smeared, that my bones and my whole skeleton was kind of smeared into the ground whenever I hit and began colliding. The first impacts, in particular, the first two poles. You know, I was really thrown around. It probably would have been completely torn apart would it not have been for the leathers that I was wearing. Anyway, I hope this show has been interesting and somewhat illuminating for people, and hopefully, you know, it's gotten some people to think about not just hypnotic techniques, but alternate techniques in general. There's a technique called EMDR that may be worth looking into for many people. There are many such techniques, and I think we all get into the thought process that, man, I'm in physical pain. I know where I was. I certainly, you know, I have a spinal cord injury that shows up on my MRI, and that's where my pain's coming from. And that's what the doctors tell you, and that's what you believe, and that's what your unconscious believes too. Or maybe not. Maybe my unconscious didn't believe it, and that's why it was holding me accountable to putting the fentanyl on, and eventually... I feel like that's why that all drugs eventually wane, in that they are addressing a symptom and not the cause of the problem. And the organism, me as an organism, is really only interested in survival. So we care about what really works, not what the advertisements on TV tell us work. So until I found the treatments that you know, I'll tell you about in this podcast at some point, you know, I really didn't have any hope at all. But I would not have found those treatments had I not been looking, and I would not have found David had I not been basically pushed to the brink of action. So I guess what I'd like to encourage everybody is, please don't give up trying things. If you aren't satisfied with the pain that you're in, and I don't know many people that are, I hope that you can really think about your condition deeply, hopefully with the help of a therapist, and some guided hypnosis may be useful in that as well, to really kind of maybe think about your illness from a different perspective, and hopefully gain some traction on it and make some progress in the way that I have. If not, I still appreciate you listening. Thank you very much for your time and attention. And please like and subscribe the Origami Vancast. And please comment if I can improve. You know, this is part performance that I need to... give for you, to give you something to listen to. On the other hand, it's pretty difficult for me to perform in some of these cases when we talk about these emotional things. So we'll get out of my details here shortly, and I think the next show is going to be with a friend of mine. Her name is Jen, and she is also, or was also, in very severe chronic pain, and has used cannabis in her own way to cure herself, and to have a morphine pump removed from her body that she had at the time when we met. So I did a very long interview with her in Pennsylvania, and I really look forward to sharing that with you. And we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you for listening to the Origami Vancast.